Blog Talk Radio.
Radio coming to you live on a Friday morning at 8:30 a.m. Central Time. Today is a very sad day. What we knew would happen is happening to our friends over in the UK who follow us on Gab. Paul Golding has been violently attacked last night. As you may recall or remember, he and my other friend on Gab, Jada Fanson, leaders of the Britain First Party, were put in prison for 36 months for exposing a gang rape shop. Here in America, that might sound kind of weird. Doing investigation work, exposing the bad guy, yet they get criminally charged. Yes, that's what happened. We have no news yet of Jada, so keep her in your prayers. Paul has suffered a severe broken nose. He was put in public housing where they live with all the other people in prison. In the UK, most of everyone who's in prison are Islamic jihadis. The prisons over there are a school on becoming Islamic terrorists. Of course, they put him in the population or in public housing. Just like the man who played a practical joke of placing one strip of raw bacon on the door handle of a mosque. It was a joke, folks. And it was a political joke saying, we know what you, we have seen the terrorist attacks, witness them. You're tired of it. They too put that guy in public housing. A few months later, mysteriously is found dead, murdered. According to the police, inside the jail, nothing to report. They knew what they were doing with Paul and Jada, putting them in public housing, where they could be attacked. So far, that's what happened to Paul. Now, if you don't know anything about a broken nose, it's nothing to be laughing about, even though it may seem small or not too serious. But if the nose is broken so severely by pushing the palm of your hand up against the face of the nose, that nose can go into the brain and kill you. Today, I put on Twitter, the heart of the lion heart will roar today. I also put on the radio page, I'll be speaking the names of my two great-grandfathers, Edward the Confessor and Alfred the Great. I don't like doing this, using my deals, but since it's known, it's confirmed by different historical societies, it's a good time to use it. To the court in Manchester, where they put Chadwick and Paul on trial, found them guilty of talking bad about Islam, put them into prisons, public housing, where all the criminals are put together, where they work out together, where they watch TV together, where they eat together, where they have their exercise time together. They did not think it was fortunate enough or important enough to put them in protective housing, meaning in their own private cell, where the meals and everything is delivered to them, where they would be protected against the known Islamic Jihad school in the prisons of the United Kingdom. What has happened to Paul is no secret among the citizens there. There's no secret to us here at Ordo Militaris Catholicus, because we knew and said it would probably happen. The death of that innocent man who put a strip of bacon on the door handle of a radical mosque. Now the attack on Paul is on them, on the government itself. They know about these prisons. They do nothing to stop these prisons from what they are now becoming, a school for Islamic Jihad. I'm not going to read much about the incident so I don't give away any more details that there are already out there about where Paul is being held. If you're a friend of Ordo Militaris Catholicus and you want to know more, let me know. I'll DM you after I clear it with our president of the order. The voice of my ancestors, to President Donald J. Trump, our dear President of the United States, while you're having meetings with Ireland here and celebrating St. Patrick's Day, you are very busy, I know, and doing a lot of good things for the country. There are two people who need protective status and brought here. Before anything else can happen to them, it's time we get tough on the current Prime Minister, Theresa May, and her staff, because they know everything about these prisons, and yet they put them in public housing. These two Christian political leaders trying to restore and save Britain and the United Kingdom from the current dictatorship where freedom of speech and Christian persecution can occur while Islam is protected. Two journalists and free speech activists were detained because they were speaking the truth. They were detained because of what they stood for. Then, the next day, our international headquarters, located in Helena, Montana, was shut down on Twitter. Because we decided it is good for us to question why is the Prime Minister attacking Christians and persecuting them, and yet do nothing to save her nation, her citizens, from the Islamic terrorism she is bringing in. So far, 500 Islamic State terrorists have been let back in into the UK. Yet she stops a Catholic journalist from America and another Christian journalist from Canada because they dare speak the truth about Islam, they dare to interview Tommy Robinson or go to Hyde Park at the historic Speaker's Corner and speak on free speech. Freedom of speech and those censoring it, but you let in Islamic terrorists and thinking they will not be a problem. Who are you kidding? Are you so blind that you are allowing the destruction of Britain, the destruction of the United Kingdom? Because you are so politically correct that you rather side with the protection of Islam, meaning you are now becoming a Sharia state, when Sharia does not belong in England. Sharia does not belong in Great Britain. Sharia does not belong in the United Kingdom. Why is that? Because the United Kingdom, England, and Great Britain is not secular or Islamic, but Christian. So why are you calling these Islamic terrorists a non-security threat? You think us who are questioning this crazy mindset where we have the right to question about Christian persecution, the persecution of freedom of speech, and yet you support Islam? You think bringing in all these thousands of terrorists back from the battlefield into the UK will not be a problem. Let's see, there's been 4 attacks. Maybe a few more. By jihadis. You calling a few hundred more then to a few thousand more a non-security threat? You call conservatives, Catholics, Christians, a security threat? Is that why the House Secretary Amber Rudd, who claims to be a conservative, yet supports censoring what they call far-right propaganda and websites? So they like to censor the reportings of Tommy Robinson because he tells the truth. They like to censor Order Militaris because we care about Christian persecution. So, and they censor Brittany Pettibone and Laura Southern because they dare to tell the truth. They censored Paul Golding and Jada Franson for exposing the truth. Yet they have no problem, once again, bringing in Islamic terrorists. And if you question anything about it, you get charged with a hate crime. What is this nonsense going on in the UK government and parliament? You guys shouldn't be protecting and abiding by the enemy's wishes. There are good, peaceful, caring Muslims in your country. Yes, I've seen them on Fox News. They are wonderful people, those who are on Fox News. But those who you let in are not the good ones. If you are so blinded by political correctness to say that Islamic State has nothing to do with Islam, or that Islam does not call for jihad, you are not fit to be in the government of protecting the British Kingdom. As we hear from the interview coming up soon, I will play of Lord Pearson's interview of Tommy Robinson. He says it pretty darn clear. By him being in the palace of the House of Lords, you can question Islam, but his folks there, but his fellow House members don't want him to ask those questions. But once he leaves that door, the House of Lords, he said he too can be charged with a hate crime for bringing up the past and history of Islam. And he says, they want to charge me for a hate crime, bring it on. Those are the leaders UK needs as the leaders of the government. Not these socialistic fake conservatives who support censoring the truth, who support censoring of free speech, who support putting innocent men and women in prison to censor them. If anyone is listening out there who has a bit of common sense and love of their country left in their heart. Protect Paul Golding. Protect Jada Francine. Protect them. Put them where they won't be harmed. Mr. President Donald Trump, I ask you, bring Paul and Jada here with any other members of the Britain First Party that are being threatened. Let them grow their party in exile. And once they are powerful enough, strong enough, then they can go back when it's better. But they need protection. They need our help. Theresa May is no true Prime Minister. She loves the EU more than she does the British people. If she loved the people of Great Britain, United Kingdom, and England, she would not have signed a weak Brexit deal with the EU. She would have been like new leaders of Italy telling the EU to stuff it, saying we ain't going to pay you nothing. That is how you should act to this criminal organization known as the European Union. It is destroying Europe through the Islamic invasion. Do not call them refugees. Do not call them migrants. Because true migrants and refugees bring their families. When these men are military-aged males who leave their families in the Middle East, who come over with pockets loads of cash for Europe and brand new top-of-the-line iPhones none of us could ever afford. And they are taught where to go. So do not call them refugees or migrants. Call them what they are. Invaders. Barbarians. Look at Sweden, how Sweden has fallen. The land of the Vikings now have fallen to the land of the weaklings. If the UK citizens do not wake up, join together, as Lord Pearson will tell you in a moment, UK shall look like Sweden. That is what the socialistic government wants. Now I'm going to play you an interview of Tommy Robinson with Lord Pearson.
Lord Pearson has been a vocal critic of the Islamic ideology. Parliament's House of Lords for his anti-corruption stance against insurances. He's done extensive work campaigning and fundraising for people with learning difficulties, and he's the co-founder of the pro-free trade think tank. Following the exposure of another Rotherham-scale Greek gang scandal, he took the opportunity to once again question the government on what they intend to do about the problem of Muslim Greek gangs. And he wanted to ask them if we are even allowed to talk about Islam in the UK.
These girls are usually raped several times a day. And so if we accept the views of our lead police officer for child protection, of Rotherham's MP, and of the recent Jay and Quilliam reports, we seem to be looking at millions of rapes of white and Sikh girls by Muslim men, only 222 of whom have been convicted since 2005. So, my lords, will the government ask our Muslim leaders whether the perpetrators can claim that their behavior is sanctioned in the Quran and to issue a fatwa against it? And second, my lords, will the government encourage a national debate about the various interpretations of Islam? Can we talk about Islam without being accused of hate crime?
Ogden House of Lords, to witness the political establishment's response to his questions. So I've sat down afterwards with him to talk in more detail about what needs to be done to tackle the problems Islamic immigration has brought to the UK. So Lord Pearson, you're one of the only voices in the House of Lords that I've ever seen talk about Islam. Why do you think so few people are talking about the Islamisation of Britain?
Well, remember, House of Lords is a very Europhile place, but of course it's also a very Islamophile place, and people like those, like the people in the House of Lords, are completely out of touch with what I call real people. They call them ordinary people, but with real people and the sort of lives they have to lead. In this instance, because of the encroachment of Islam on our culture and civilization. And they're out of touch with it. We are, on the whole, a very tolerant nation and all the rest of it. And they see the vast majority of Muslims as nice, peaceful people at the moment. And they find it very hard to think that they can have anything to do with the Islamists and the grooming gang people and all the rest of it. So they just shut their minds off. And anyone who tries to talk about it is immediately accused of hate crime.
That's what I want to ask you next. When you've tried to raise the issue, what sort of reaction have you had?
Well, the reaction is very negative. It's even been said that I shouldn't be allowed to ask these questions in the House of Lords, that I'm endangering the security of the Palace of Westminster by asking these questions, because I've asked lots over the years and things. And So they've said
by you asking questions,
yeah,
simply about Islam, you're endangering the security of the palace.
Yeah, that has been said.
So because of that, you should not ask them questions.
Well, that's sort of in the background. But the main criticism is that this is hate crime. As soon as you can say what you like about Christianity, you can say what you like about the virgin birth, the miracles, and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And nobody gives a damn about that. We certainly don't get the bishops jumping up and down or anyone. You can say what you like about the Hindu gods, you say, but as soon as you touch Islam and you begin to wonder whether Muhammad was such a personal character, peace be upon him. And as soon as you begin to look into the history of the thing a bit, all hell breaks loose and you're completely ostracized and everyone's very angry with you, which is what I want to do. I want the whole of this thing to start. We've got to start talking about Islam. Perhaps, for instance, the absolute basic tenets of Islam, which are difficult words. I hope people aren't too bored, but one of them is abrogation and cancellation, whereby the later violent verses of the Quran, the verses of the sword, cancel the earlier ones,
the peaceful ones,
yeah, of which there are very few. But anyway, the example of the Prophet Muhammad, after he moved to Medina in 622 from Mecca, and he gradually expanded his religion and became so powerful that in the end he could say to his multicultural, multi-faith hosts in Medina, look, either you join my religion or you're going to exile, or I'll allow some of you to pay a tax, but I'm going to kill the rest of you if you don't join. And he killed 600 Jews in one afternoon. And Islam then went on to conquer most of the known world. And the Crusades were clearly, historically, a response to 400 years of Muslim aggression. And yet we're told that this is a religion of peace. I don't know, is it? But let's talk about it.
Do you think it's a lack of knowledge on behalf of people within the establishment?
Yeah.
Or do you think they're aware of the problem, but they don't have to?
It is so obvious to them that Islam must be a religion of peace that they are not prepared to look at whether it might not be, or whether at least the jihadists, the terrorists, and the grooming gang people can use what is in the Quran. This is why I asked for a conference on the interpretation of the Quran. It is all there in black and white. And how do we get rid of it? How do we say it's not there? Well, we have to talk about it. And they have to say that. The Muslims have to set up a great conference council. And they could, our Muslim leaders could say, this grooming gang, we put a fatwa, anyone who does this grooming gang stuff is cast out of Islam. It's about the only thing these Islamists fear, is being cast out of Islam. But when we look through the whole history of grooming, we see that there's not been one report from a fellow Muslim on their fellow members of their community. They won't talk about it. And I have tried over the years, 3 or 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, I did manage to get a group of very top Muslims to agree to meet in private and to go into this sort of area and say, we need a new kind of Islam. We cannot go along with abrogation, takiyya, and ahisha. And we're going to change it. But it never happened because they all got so frightened before they were supposed to meet that they never turned up. So we've got a job on our hands, I'm afraid, because only they can do it. It can only be done from within Islam. What do you think? Bear in mind all the grooming gang scandal we just spoke about today. When we see reports that show complete police failures, government failures, social service failures, why do you think none of those people have been brought to justice? None of the people who facilitated and accommodated these women, because they would say that they avoided being guilty of racism. Racism is this blanket word stuffed around, and as soon as you're accused of being a racist, those police people and the people who should, the police and the social workers, who now should be prosecuted, which is in my question, will all have believed that they couldn't do anything about this because of the sensitivities of the Muslim community. And if they did go into it, they would be accused of racism. And racism is idiotic in this context, because Islam is in every race on the planet. So it isn't racism, whatever else it is. The political and cultural elite seem to be ramping up their rhetoric on people like me. And what I say. Now, just this week, we've seen two journalists. We've seen an American journalist detained and held for days and deported because she was coming to interview. We've seen a Canadian journalist who's just been refused entry and deported today as well. Where do you see this leading? Where do you see this talk? Where do you see the government response, the establishment response? Where do you see this heading? Well, unless we can somehow start being allowed to talk about Islam, that's the first step. If we can talk about it and understand it, then we might get somewhere with persuading the people who treat you as they do, and I think it will get worse. And you have been a naughty boy, Tommy, in the past. You have quite often been a naughty boy. And so, in a way, then it's sort of made easier for them to demonize you. But anyone who read your book, Enemy of the State, I think would take a different view of you. But they don't bother to read that. Of course they don't. Like this book out now, this wretched girl, which is called Please Let Me Go. Why don't they read that? Then they might understand something. But it's a sort of blanket establishment position that isn't going to look at anything smelly down there. That's what it is. What do you think it's going to take for the people in Westminster to wake up to what's happening? Well, they won't wake up until it's too late, because I think we're on our way to riots. I would have thought we're under with the frustration which is growing from principally the white working class, who've had to put up with all the discrimination against them, the schools, the housing list, etc. I don't know, the police not arresting a Muslim man in a beard on a handheld thing while driving a car. I mean, masses of it. They have to put up with that. But these people, we don't have to. We sit there in our gilded chamber and we couldn't go down. And so what I think it will if, and I think it's pretty gloomy in the future if we can't start talking about Islam, and then it might spill over into the Muslim community and give them more of a chance of standing up against their violent co-religionists on the terrorist front and the grooming gang lot on this front.
So if we don't see anything, if we don't see any changes, if the government don't wake up, what do you see?
First, he riots. Of course, there'll be riots. I mean, if you look, I mean, today, at the, and I met them, and they're wonderful people. If you look at the Veterans Against Terrorism and the Football Lads Against Terrorism, I mean, these are serious, real people. And they have marched. They have marched, I think, 74,000 of them marched in London recently, an entirely peaceful march. They don't have racists, etc., etc., etc. But on one of the, one of them told me that on one of those marches there was a BBC camera crew and a Sky camera crew, and they said to the people in charge of the crew, well, this is really good, you're going to give us some coverage. And the BBC chap replied them, well, we're not unless there's a riot. I mean, we've got to have friction, and so otherwise we're not going to cover it because it's just too boring. And this chap was very bright. Then he said to the BBC man, and I suppose if there is a riot and you cover it, if there is a fight and a fight does break out, we will be guilty of hate crime. We, what? And the BBC said, you've got it, mate.
You've got it. I was there. And the media, that's what I'd like to ask you. What do you see as the media? What do you see as their responsibility in what's currently happening? With regards to the British public, of what I'd say is being deceived about what Islam is and the problems in our country, what role do you think the media have played in that?
Well, the media, I tend to focus on the sort of main channels, and I do quite a lot of work on the BBC's coverage of Brexit, which is a scandal, because the chairman and director general of the BBC cannot send me and my little group of cross-party MPs. They cannot send us a transcript of a single BBC programme since the referendum, which has examined the opportunities of Brexit. Not promoted, just examined. They can't do it. There isn't one. The BBC is the Guardian newspaper of the airwaves, really. That's what it is. And so what do I see the media doing? The media at the moment, the BBC, they're absolutely no hope at all. We haven't got a Fox television here or something of that kind. And so I don't think they do it.
It's funny you say that because that's actually what I want to launch into now. We want to become a media brand, the alternative media brand for the UK and for Europe, to give people the truth, to bring them the facts.
But at least they're going to talk about it and decide for themselves, instead of being told that these people who are making your life such a misery and blowing us up all over the place, these are peaceful people and Islam is not the cause of it. What I want to go into and have a look at Islam and say if and to what extent is Islam the cause of it. I don't think I'm concerned. And even the Archbishop of Canterbury, Plessy, in France, the September before last, and to a meeting of schools in this country, the Archbishop of Canterbury did actually say, we will never deal with Islamism and come with Islamism unless we understand Islam. He said it is very unhelpful if we go on pretending that ISIS has nothing to do with Islam. And he also said it's time for our religious leaders to stand up and be counted. Now, he said that the September before last, and it's got nowhere. I don't think he's going to say it again.
The bishop who spoke today in the House of Lords, he certainly didn't take that.
And he was very naughty, the bishop in the House, because you're supposed to get up and ask a question, a short question. He got up and made a speech. And in doing so, he cut out one or two people who might have supported me.
Can I ask you, is it a lonely voice? I've watched myself, just personally.
Yeah.
Personally, I've watched myself. I've followed the comments you've given, the questions you've asked, because, if I'm honest, you're the only person I've seen within the political spectrum that wants to talk about Islam. So are there other people?
No, I think I'm the only member of either House of Parliament since, I think it was 1923, when Churchill talked about Mohammedans in a fairly objective fashion. And there are people, there's the Baroness Cox, for instance, who's doing wonderful work on Sharia law and on the treatment of Muslim women under Sharia law and all the rest of it. And so she is doing, and on honour-based violence and that sort of thing, she's taking the lead on that. She's had three bills in the Lords, three second readings over the last 3 or 4 years, all of them brilliant debates, everyone in the debate agreeing with her about Sharia law and its treatment of women and gays and so on. And she's been supported by everyone,
except the government and the bishops of the Church of England.
Well, and why do you think that is?
Because what I've been telling you, because they just cannot bring themselves to dare to look at what this thing might really be, because they won't know what to do. They wouldn't know what to do with it.
And if they accept the reality of what we want.
Well, yes, I mean, they'd have to do all sorts of things. I think, you'd have to begin to learn what's going on in our mosques, the sermons. I mean, I personally wouldn't require every sermon to be made in English so that we could understand it. I would think we should be told, or we should be able to find out what is going on in our madrasas, but we can't, because I've asked a question of the government the other day, and they admitted, no, we don't really know how many madrasas they are. We certainly don't know what's going on in them. And what's more, we couldn't tell you. I've got a written answer to that effect. I mean, not quite in that name, but that's where we are.
Which, when we had four successful terrorist attacks last year and 12 prevented.
Right.
When we had four successful terrorist attacks and 12 prevented, that is criminal. It's criminal that our government's not willing
to. And, of course, if the madrasas are where the whole thing is being fermented for the, whatever it is, 40% of Muslims in this country are under the age of 15, against 6 or 7% of us. The whole thing is, you know, I think it's, unless we all wake up, unless these great movements, unless the football lads and the veterans and everything, they get themselves organized into a political movement. Obviously, the only thing I think they can do is to join UKIP, because UKIP is the only political party that will take this on in any way at all.
You think currently UKIP now, under Joe Bannon's leadership, would take on and give the working class people a voice against his government?
I mean, I tell them, you know, you can walk us march as much as you want. I mean, a million people marched against the Iraq War. I can't remember how many marched in the Countryside Alliance War. We don't give a damn. Fox hunting was still banned, and Tony Blair merrily sailed into Iraq and caused the complete foul up of the whole of that part of the world in doing so, which some of us could see. But they won't. So the only thing that can be done is to get your followers and, as I say, the veterans and the football lads and so on, they have got, and I really think the best thing they can do is join UKIP, give Gerard a run. Gerard is signed on Islam, has been for years. Quite a few of the other people in UKIP aren't, for one reason or another. But Gerard is, and the National Executive Committee is behind him, and he's got a real fight in his hands. He needs money. If these people can change, and, you know, it's real people. This should be a movement of real people funneled through a political party. Because only these people, not you were looking at, and the House of Commons and David Cameron and all that lot and Theresa May, they're not going to do anything about this until they fear they might lose their seats.
They need to be replaced. So if we look across Europe, if we look at just what happened in Italy with the elections, if we look to Austria, if we look to Sweden, wherever we look, the fastest growing political party, every country got anti-Islam political parties.
And anti-EU.
Yeah. It goes together. Now in Britain, we don't have one. But you believe that under Jeremy Corbyn's leadership, UKIP could become that choice.
I do. I know him. I've known him for many years. I mean, UKIP is not for sheep. UKIP is for individuals and people. So obviously, it has its difficulties. And after all, I posed as leader of it in the 2010 election, so I know a bit about it. But they are, you know, the real people out there, the real sort of the earth, are still members of UKIP. And if it can get, and if you look, I don't know, I think that's supposed to be a million followers, other football lads, and veterans, and other people there. That's the sort of thing we need to get into UKIP. And then we can change things. Then we can say, you know, we're not going to go on with this. We're not being allowed free speech on this.
That's one of the points I want to make. I believe completely Britain is primed for a UKIP led by someone who's going to take on Islam. Britain's ready.
Yeah.
I don't think people within the party realise that.
I think Gerard's always been sorry. I mean, Nigel was always a bit windy about Islam, quite frankly, and the others in Bolton, who cares. But Nigel had a great... he wanted to focus on one job, which was to get us out of the EU. And that he did brilliantly. He did brilliantly. I mean, he deserves a dukedom and, I don't know, half the domains of Europe. He's personally, he's done incredibly well. But Gerard is the man on Islam. If
It gives me a bit of hope hearing that. Well, I believe so. Well, tell me what else there is.
I'd like to talk to you.
Something I see is currently dangerous.
So they've got to join.
They've got to sign up.
They've got
and
to
pay
sign.
Their subscriptions, and UKIP will have the money and all the rest of it. Because there'll be a leadership vote coming up soon.
Well,
you
have for whatever it was, 90 days. But if Gerard has got enough money in, and they've got enough members in, I don't think anyone will dare to challenge him. And if they do, he'll win. Because he can, yeah, well, he will. I mean, if he doesn't, I don't know, Tommy, go and start your own party, but I tell you, it's an expensive business.
Oh, no.
It takes millions and millions to build up a brand image. I mean, I looked at changing UKIP's name in 2010, and it was going to cost $22 million then. So, you know, and I'm very glad it didn't. And something I see as dangerous is the attack on free speech in the UK. So this last weekend, when a couple tried to fly into the UK, with Martin Selner and Brittany Pettibone, Martin Selner was due to speak at Speaker's Corner. He was stopped and prevented from coming in. Brittany Pettibone was coming to interview me. The reason she was not allowed in to our country, they were held in a detention centre, put in prison for 3 days and deported. We're seeing this growing and growing and growing. Anyone who has a political opinion or voices their concerns of Islam seem to be getting the full weight of the state. We've just seen, again, two days ago, we've seen Lauren Southern, who's a Canadian journalist, and the reason they gave her why she's now banned from the UK was the installation of blasphemy laws, medieval blasphemy laws, because she criticises Islam. Where do you see that taking us? Where do you see that? Well, it's taking us down the road to fascism, clearly, because it's one of the hallmarks of fascism. And we've been doing this in the Lords too. I mean, it seems that the Crown Prosecution Service has abrogated to itself powers of arrest under hate crime, which are not actually supported in the statute. And Lord Vincent, who's a colleague of mine, he raised this in an oral question in the Lords on the 5th of December last year, and the government was, you know, shilly-shallying around and avoiding the question. So I got up and simply said, could they be absolutely precise? Could they assure us that a Christian preacher who was preaching the divinity of Christ as superior to any other religion, and that Jesus was the only son of the one true God. I said, if someone gets on there, can the minister guarantee that he won't be arrested for hate crime? She refused to answer the question.
Because she can't, because under the new hate crime laws, if someone feels offended.
My question today could well be hate crime outside, but I spoke under privilege in the laws. They can't arrest me for what I said in there. They can arrest me for what I say here. Yeah. I don't care if they do. It should, rather prove one's point.
For me, it's interesting to hear that they're warning you about raising questions or speaking about Islam because they believe you put the palace in danger. So it's that seems to be the common theme, whether it be the grooming gangs, whether it be...
Well, and victimise, and really be unkind and brutal and racist towards peaceful, mild Muslim friends, who they see wandering around, all being peaceful and so on, in the mosque, but they don't seem to... In Islam, we're dealing with something vibrant and alive. Just look at the mosques on a Friday. Look at churches on a Sunday. I mean, come on. You should see that this thing's coming. It means business.
Stands on his head. Dark on his head.
Not at all. Very much, Thomas.
Be good, huh?
I'll be good, I will.
Make sure that goes on. Be good, you're not to be naughty anymore. Because I'm saying, yes, Tommy was a bit of a naughty boy, but now he's going straight, and he's right. I just want to say perfect.
All right, folks. That was the interview with Lord Pearson. Hopefully you could hear most of it. Tommy's audio was on his YouTube channel is having a little trouble, so hopefully it's not the state cracking down, but if it is, I'll share the link once we get done here. You heard it from Lord Pearson himself. Way the country's going in the UK, where they're cracking down on anyone questioning Islam, questioning why you're targeting Christians and not stopping Islamic terrorism from entering your country. The full weight of the state comes down upon you. As Lord Pearson said, it is a road to fascism. As he said, I'll repeat, since he spoke under privilege as a member of the House of Lords, he could ask that question. He did. But once he left the House of Lords to go back to his office, they could have came in there and arrested him. He didn't quite say bring it on, but in America, I translate, he said bring it on. Because he is right. They are wrong. So look into this judge who's leading the UK IP right now. Way it sounds from Lord Pearson, he's a really good guy. Really tough on Islam. Maybe why we haven't seen much of anything on Twitter or news that we get from international sources in the United States. These people in the House of Commons, Lords, the Prime Minister, who turn a blind eye to the problem happening in the country by implementing blasphemy laws that are in Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, Iran, and other Islamic countries. Who do you think they answer to? They only care about what the EU tells them to do. That is why they went for the worst Brexit deal possible. Fellow people of the UK, I urge you to do what Lord Pearson said to do. With the football lads, veterans against terrorism, all of you out there, unite as one UKP, UKIP, as Lord Pearson said to do. If all of you conservatives, true conservatives, unite, you can save your country, you can save your heritage, your traditions. You can stop the rise of the fascist state where freedom of speech, speaking the truth, can be banned. And it is being banned. We know it for a fact here at Ordo Militaris Catholicus. We must keep speaking the truth. Keep showing the truth about Islam. No matter where they put us, what they do to us, keep showing the truth. But hopefully before it gets too late, their eyes will be open, your ears will be open. But I find Lord Pearson very credible in believing that all those liberal socialistic members of the House of Commons and Lords will only wake up once it's too late. Maybe too late for them, but make sure it's not too late for you, the actual people. Do as he says. I support Lord Pearson. Our email letter to him about what happened to Old Militaris Catholicus has been forwarded to him. I am excited to hear back from him. Even though he is a single voice in the House of Lords in the Parliament of the UK, it is good to have him on our side. So I ask you, through my ancestors, who were your kings and queens, it is time to unite to save Britain and the United Kingdom from the rise of this fascism, where freedom of speech is being banned, where the Islamic blasphemy laws are taking over the laws of the country. It is time to defend England. It is time to defend Britain. It is time to defend the United Kingdom. I ask you, if you're in the Parliament, ask Prime Minister Theresa May and Amber Rudd, the Home Secretary, why they had our international headquarters Twitter feed based in the United States shut down for speaking out against Christian persecution. Ask them why they did it. Ask them why they are implementing Sharia law into a Christian nation, into a Christian island of nations. Why, if they love the EU so much, why haven't they dropped their British citizenships and left for the European nation countries? If they love the EU so much and despise Great Britain, England, and the United Kingdom, let them leave and go to an EU nation. Take all their EU-friendly people with them. If they do not want to support and protect the citizens of this great nation. Finally, Paul Golding and Jada Franson and all the members of the British First Party, in your prayers. If you're in these jails where Paul is held and Jada is held, and you still love your country, take it upon yourself to protect these innocent people wrongly put into prison for exposing Islamic Sharia laws. That is all. Deus vult.